Welcome back to the final Supercross edition of Talkin' Moto. It's been a little crazy last about week and a half for me. Wasn't able to record last week. Wasn't able to watch the races live this Saturday because I went along and did the whole marriage thing. So I got married on Saturday, so wasn't able to watch the races live. And that caused me, for some reason, when I went to go watch it back Sunday, something happened in Peacock, and it just started up with the 450 Heat 1. So I'm not going to focus too much on the 250 Heats because I just wasn't able to watch them. So I'm not sure if it was just my Peacock that did that or if it was everybody's Peacock that did that. So we only have notes for 450 heats and then the two main events. So that's mainly what we're going to focus on, obviously. Also, 250s, the big thing was all about the main event anyway. So I wasn't going to spend too much time on heat races. But one thing I am going to look at here and go over is the 250 East heat race, because obviously that is where we had all the only 250 championship left to crown. So going in, Tom Vielle was up by, I think it was one on Seth Hamaker and I think three or four on RJ Hampshire. Seth Hamaker went along and won his heat race. Second place was Tom Vielle. Vielle did have the faster lap of the heat race between the two of them. And RJ Hampshire, once again, I was not able to watch it, but he did not qualify straight into the main event from the heat race. So I am going to try and look real quick if they posted what happened to old RJ in his heat race. Where here it is. Goes over the tabletop, doubles, kind of lands on a tough block a little bit, throws his body forward, and then just lands sideways on the face of the next jump. Very, very awkward. He had one leg still over the bike when he hit. Head whipped back pretty quickly. I think he might have done the splits. Holy smokes. And then landed right on the back of his neck. So, obviously, very big, costly mistake for RJ Hampshire. And then it looks like when he got up, he was stuck on another tough block. So he might have been able to qualify straight through the main or straight through the heat race if he didn't end up getting stuck on this tough block, which one of the track workers had to cut it out of his, looks like it's stuck in his rear sprocket and his brake and everything. And he still came back from that to finish only in 10th place. So kudos to RJ Hampshire for that. So our three main competitors did end up making it into the main event. RJ Hampshire went along and won his LCQ. So going into the main event, 250 main event. Like I said, we're not spending too much time dilly-dallying on the other stuff. We got to jump right into this main event because that is where all the action was going to go down. Deegan was able to grab the hole shot, and I noticed a lot of the guys, they were hitting the upside of the landing ramp for the finish line and kind of banking off that. I noticed some guys in the 450s did it as well. Deegan was able to do that in the main event, grab the hole shot. Vielle got a great start and was able to just kind of shut the door on everybody. But he did have his West Coast teammate, Julien Bomaire, who seemed like, seemed like there might have been a little team tactics going on. They both denied it, obviously. Both said there was no team tactics, but it seemed like Juju had a little bit more speed than Vial did. And it took a little mistake from Vial for Juju to make the pass on him. And so once Julien made that pass, Hamaker was then down 3 points, and RJ Hampshire was then down 5 points. Then Vial made another mistake in a rhythm section. Hamaker was able to sneak by. I noted there was no contact from Hamaker to Tom Vial. That gave Hamaker a 1 point lead. Then there's a little bit of contact between Hamaker and Julien Bomaire, getting all these guys KTM teammates jumbled up in my head a little bit, to be honest. There was a little bit of contact for Hamaker to get past Julien Bomaire, like I said. And then the next lap, Juju came right back at him. Flip-flop it. Juju had a pretty solid pass on Seth Hamaker. A little bit of contact in it. Nothing too crazy in my mind. Once again, Julien was asked about it in the post-race press conference and said he wasn't trying to do anything to help out his teammate. He was racing his own race, racing for his own positions, bonus money, all that type of stuff. And Hamaker just happened to be the guy that was there. Now, if it was his teammate, I don't think it would have been the same thing. But anyway, Hamaker then was able to respond and make an aggressive pass on Julien again. And looking through the social medias here, there wasn't really anything posted about this, which is insane, because there's a lot of craziness that went on in that main event. So, reset here. We have Tom Vial sliding backwards. He straight up just fell out of his championship. He came in with the red plate, fell out of it, and just essentially conceded that the championship wasn't his. He wasn't going to be able to go back-to-back because he had Hamaker in front of him, and he also had Hampshire who got in front of him. And then RJ, RJ'd. I don't have a problem with what he did. He went in for aggressive pass. He needed to make an aggressive pass. There's about 2 minutes left. Tom Vial essentially out of the championship, a position behind both of them. So it was down to them. If RJ could make a move, an aggressive pass, maybe put him on the ground, knock him off the track a little bit, gain a couple positions that way with Hamaker falling backwards, then that's what you got to do. I mean, it's a championship race, final round. You got to make your money somehow. Hampshire being the West Coast champion last year, obviously wasn't able to race on the West Coast this year with his wrist injury that he's still dealing with, I guess. But right before the corner, right before the finish line, RJ came in aggressive. It's RJ Hampshire. You know he's going to go aggressive. You know he's going to go for the win or the championship whenever he thinks it's out there for him to take. He puts Hamaker down, but Hamaker then falls on top of Hampshire, bikes are sitting on top of each other. They're trying to untangle them. Julien Bomaire gets by, and then by time they get their bikes untangled, RJ Hampshire's running back down the berm trying to get on his bike. Vial comes through and is able to make a pass on both of them with about 2 minutes left, and live timing and scoring, live points, was able to retake the points lead in the championship. And that is pretty much how it ended. But Seth Hamaker did put in a very, very strong charge towards the very last couple corners. Put in a strong charge and made it a lot closer than what I was expecting for sure, with how long them two guys were stuck together in the corner. Especially with Hampshire getting up first. But credit to Vial. He is, I think, like the third guy to win a 250 championship with only one win. A couple of guys have done it with zero wins. And I believe Chase Sexton was the last guy to do it with one win, is the stat that I saw. Yet here it is, courtesy of old Pulp MX Steve Mathis. Chase Sexton, 2019, won the East Coast Championship with one win. The three guys to do it, 1985, Bobby Moore, 1987, Willie Surratt, might be saying that wrong, I'm not sure, I wasn't born yet, and 1997, Tim Ferry. And then our one win championship guys are 93, Jimmy Gatiss, once again, might be saying that wrong, not sure, wasn't born yet, in 2011, Brock Tickle, and then like I just mentioned, Sexton in 19, and now Tom Vial in 2025. Tom Vial has the most championships with the fewest amount of wins. He now has two championships in three wins. Sexton, two championships with six wins. And Sexton's tied with Grant Langston and Dylan Ferrandis. Both guys, two championships, six wins. Also, from Steve Mathis, who thanked MX Reference. So, shout out MX Reference for that neat little stat right there. So, looking at the final points for both, we'll do 250 East and 250 West, because 250 West did get wrapped up the week before when I wasn't recording. I didn't have an episode, I don't believe. I don't know, I also just had a little brain fart right there. So, 250 East gets wrapped up. Tom Vial wins by 3 points over Seth Hamaker, and RJ Hampshire was 7 points down. So, pretty much just as close as they came in to Salt Lake City. That's about as close as they left. And now 250 West. Hayden Deegan won 32 points over Julien Bomaire. And in third place was the rookie Cole Davies, who was 50 points back, who missed Salt Lake City. Got landed on by Jordan Smith, very ugly crash, broken nose and broken, oh man, I can't recall now off the top of my head, and I don't remember seeing it really posted anywhere. See, I know he broke his nose, and a humerus, I believe, was the other injury that He sustained I can't seem to find it on just a quick search here, but broken nose and humerus, I do believe. So one big takeaway I had, well, one other big takeaway I had, I guess this whole thing really has been a big takeaway since I wrapped up the recap. Joe Shimoda might be the biggest what if this year. He came out strong, wins Anaheim 1. Let's pull up Joe Shimoda's results here. Wins Anaheim 1 and then breaks his two fingers in San Diego in qualifying. So just a massive, massive letdown for Joe, especially with how he's usually starts off slow, comes on late. This year, he started strong right off the bat. Like I said, winning Anaheim 1 and then breaking his fingers in San Diego. I think he might be the biggest what if for this Supercross season. Another one who, honestly, Austin Faulkner, he got 22nd in Salt Lake City. Not sure what happened. Wasn't on the broadcast at all. I would like to say probably a failure this year on his new Triumph team. Not the best. Started off in 17th in Tampa. His best this year was a 7th, and he did that in Detroit and in East Rutherford, which I believe East Rutherford, was that where he qualified near the top? Yeah, he qualified 4th in East Rutherford. So, just a little confusing for old Austin Faulkner. I think it's 450 time here. So we'll probably just do a little bit of the same. We'll cover heat races a little bit more here and go over qualifying a little bit more, just because I was able to watch their heat races. And there we are. Chase Sexton. Spoiler, he goes for another perfect day. Fastest qualifier with a 46.764 over Justin Cooper with a 47.195 and Cooper Webb in third with a 47.372. So Sexton, yes, pretty long shot for him to win the championship going into Salt Lake City. He needed to win. He needed Cooper Webb to finish sixth or worse. Cooper Webb finished fifth or better. No matter what Sexton did, he would be our champion. So we saw them square off first in the heat race number two, but we have heat race number one where Aaron Plessinger grabbed the whole shot, and he did what I mentioned in the 250 main event recap with Deegan. He kind of banked off the up ramp of the down jump or landing jump. Kind of tricky. Didn't exactly know how I was going to word that one. I tried it earlier, but I think that's the last time we'll be talking about it, thankfully. So yeah, Plessinger used that. Malcolm Stewart, kept Aaron Plessinger honest the entire race. Not much action. not much to see, to be honest. Aaron Plessinger finished first. Stewart was pretty close on him the entire race for second. And one thing I did notice was Justin Cooper was jumping the whoops, and he was already jumping the whoops, and he was losing time significantly to Plessinger and Malcolm Stewart, who were both skimming the whoops. Plessinger's got a little bit of the advantage with being taller. Malcolm Stewart, not sure what we got for a height on old Malcolm. Does it say bio? 6 foot. And now we're all jacked up here. So Malcolm Stewart, 6 foot. Aaron Plessinger, 6'1". So yeah, there's a little bit of a height difference for them two. Malcolm Stewart's always been pretty good in the whoops, and it was just real noticeable that Justin Cooper jumping through was already losing time. One cool thing from this heat race was Kyle Chisholm, in his last full-time Supercross season, was able to qualify right into the main event in 8th place. But let's get on to our championship preview here in heat race number 2 between Sexton and Webb. Cooper Webb was able to grab the whole shot. There was a couple guys who went down pretty hard. Sexton was almost involved in it, snuck out of it, was in P4. And then there's a little bit of a gap between Dean Wilson in second place and Cooper Webb. And so when Sexton went inside on Dean Wilson with 4 minutes left, he already was right onto Cooper Webb, was able to make the pass pretty easily. Didn't know if he was going to try and go for something maybe a little bit more aggressive in the heat race to put in his head for the main event, or even give him a worse gate pick. But I don't think that kind of stuff will work with Cooper Webb, with how mentally strong he is. And that's not really who Chase Sexton is. He's not going to go in there super aggressive RJ Hampshire style and try to take you out and say, if I go down, then I go down too. But Sexton, one thing I noticed, was able to put 6.6 seconds on Cooper Webb. Sexton was running his best lap was a 46.908. Now, granted, it was barely in the 46s, but he was the only one in the 46s. I almost said he was the only buddy in the 46s. That probably would have made more sense too. So yeah, Sexton rides it in very fast, like always. Wins Cooper Webb in second, and Grandpa Earl Dean Wilson in third place in his heat race. Now, main event time. Like I mentioned, Sexton, you got to go win. Cooper Webb needs to get sixth or worse. If Sexton wins, championship would be Sexton's. Cooper Webb goes out, gets a fifth or better, championship is all his, no matter what Chase Sexton does. And Cooper Webb, I noticed, because he had the third gate pick, Sexton had the first gate pick, and then it went Plessinger and then Cooper Webb. Webb started inside of Chase Sexton, and Sexton was right next to the doghouse. He was on the, I don't know how to explain it. He was on the inside part of the doghouse, and then it went Sexton, Savacci, Aaron Plessinger, and then Cooper Webb. Reading that from outside to inside, and Cooper Webb and Aaron Plessinger both got a very good start. Plessinger did the same thing he did in his heat race on that turn there. Grabbed the whole shot. He had Cooper Webb right behind him. And Sexton was in fourth, just like he was in the heat race. But going into the second corner, he was able to make the pass on, is that Savacci there? No, Shane McElrath. Sexton was able to make a quick pass on Shane McElrath to get behind Cooper Webb. And then Plessinger made a mistake, and Webb was able to make a pass on him after the whoops, where Plessinger made the mistake in the whoops. Webb was able to make the pass in the very next corner for the lead. And then Plessinger made another mistake and went from second place, let Sexton by. That might have been a little team tactic-y, because the replays that I've seen, it looks like on the face of the jump, Plessinger looks over/behind him. I think he sees Chase Sexton there, and it looked like he checked up and then just went double, double, double through the rest of the rhythm section. Didn't hit the big rhythm like everybody else was. So I don't know if maybe he was getting a little bit of team tactics suggestions thrown his way or what. But he dropped from second. I think he put him all the way down into about fifth maybe at the time, where honestly he continued to drop down to sixth place overall for Aaron Plessinger. And then Cooper Webb in the same section, I believe, that Plessinger made the mistake. Cooper Webb made the mistake about halfway through. Sexton was able to make the pass on the inside, jumping out of the rhythm section. Sexton kind of gives him a look, slows down a little bit going into the corner. I don't know, maybe hoping Sexton had somebody else behind him who would also be able to make the pass if he kind of slowed up a little bit. And they were talking on TV. James Stewart and Ricky Carmichael were talking. Is Sexton going to try and slow the race down and let the pack kind of catch up to him? And maybe somebody behind Cooper Webb can force him into a mistake. I think if Chase Sexton did that, that would be a big mistake, because they always say you got to race your own race. You can't race who's behind you. You got to worry about what's in front of you. Now, granted, that's most of the time. I mean, if you got, just going to throw his name out there, used as an example already a couple times this episode. If you got RJ Hampshire behind you, you got to race a little bit behind you. 450 class. If you got Vince Freese behind you, who's been gone, thankfully he's been gone. If you got Vince Freese behind you, you got to race behind you a little bit. But I just think it was good for Chase Sexton to just go out and just absolutely lay it down in Salt Lake City. He has now won, I know, the past 2 weeks or 2 years in Salt Lake City. So he won this year, he won last year, he won the year before, so that's three in a row, and then got a second. So he's got now three wins in a row in Salt Lake City. So obviously he's a big fan of Salt Lake City, and I can understand why. But everybody else's race isn't over yet. Justin Cooper, that is, was in third place with 15 minutes left. And last week in Denver, There was a big conversation of, was he scared to pass Cooper Webb? Did he not want to take the points away? He was getting pressured from behind by Malcolm Stewart, who they're in their own championship battle with. But Justin Cooper said he didn't get into third soon enough, so he wasn't able to make a pass, which is kind of true, but I think he had enough speed where he would have been able to make a pass still. Especially if it was anybody else, I think he would have gone for a pass just to try to get away from Malcolm Stewart and the way that race was going down in Denver. But Malcolm Stewart was able to get past Justin Cooper, and then he was able to close right up on Cooper Webb. And kind of right before the big Supercross triple, Malcolm Stewart kind of squeezes off Cooper Webb. Malcolm Stewart had to then double single the big triple. Cooper Webb went single, then double. And that also allowed Justin Cooper to get by as well, dropping Cooper Webb down to fourth place. And then we had the running order of which, as it finished, we had Sexton winning, Malcolm Stewart getting second place, and Justin Cooper getting third place in this race, and Cooper Webb becoming the seventh person to have three premier championships. He did it all this year. He re-tore his UCL in his thumb, the same one that he messed up last year. He did that in December, didn't tell anybody. The team obviously all knew about it. There was talks of him not even racing this year, or at least not starting off the season, just getting surgery. And he said, well, just let's see how the first three rounds go. He went 4 in Anaheim, 3 in San Diego, and 8 in Anaheim 2. So he did kind of struggle a little bit there, rounds about 3, 4. But, hey, it's Cooper Webb. You can never count him out with anything he does. It seems like that guy will just continue to either dig into a points lead, or if he's losing his points lead, he doesn't care. Just keeps on grinding as long as he needs to keep on grinding, pretty much. Another thing, we're in big takeaways. Cooper Webb, seventh guy to win three Premier Class championships, and the torn UCL, big takeaways. Chase Sexton, new career high, 7 wins in a season. So just imagine this. Chase Sexton, like I mentioned with Tom Vial earlier, wins one race back. Oh, man. Why can't I think of it now? Great. When was this? 2020? 2019. He wins one race and wins the 250 East Championship. This year, he wins 7 and loses the 450 championship to Cooper Webb by 2 points. That just shows you how big of getting stuck in the gate in Detroit is, and coming back for third. He had the speed, obviously. He went from last to third in a Supercross race. So, yeah, he obviously had the speed to win. Getting a little too aggressive in Arlington in the Triple Crown on the race number 3, and getting into the back of Cooper Webb, going down there, giving Cooper Webb the win. So that's an even bigger flip in points right there. It could have been Chase Sexton winning in Arlington. Could have been 8 wins right there. 9 wins could have been Detroit. And I believe Cooper Webb was the... where did Cooper Webb finish in Detroit? Was he the winner there too? Yeah. So 2 weeks in a row. Oh, 3 weeks in a row for Chase Sexton. Tampa going down late in the whoops and losing to Malcolm Stewart and finishing in fifth. Yes, I think Malcolm Stewart was going to pass him anyway with the speed he had in the whoops, but still, that's at least a second place he gives up. Detroit, he gets stuck in the gate, like I mentioned, finishes in third. Arlington, he finishes in second, but Cooper Webb wins after Sexton gets too aggressive and goes down. So Detroit and Arlington are the two very big ones because both of those ended in a Cooper Webb victory. So, final standings, Sexton loses by 2 points. Easily, if you take all those points and take away, you can take away two out of four of those, even Detroit or Arlington, and Chase Sexton's your winner. That's just based off of results. I'm sure if you did that going into Salt Lake City, Cooper Webb doesn't just kind of let him by like he did and play the long game. But shout out Justin Cooper. We'll leave Cooper Webb and Chase Sexton back because we've talked about them enough. Big shout out to Justin Cooper. Only his second season in 450 Supercross, finishes in third place, edging out Malcolm Stewart by 4 points. Now Justin Cooper was 84 points back, but hey, he had a bunch of podiums, and I think that win is going to be coming soon enough for old J. Coop. I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe we'll talk about it in our motocross preview, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see old J. Coop up on the top step for some motos and maybe even an overall. So, yeah, I think that about wraps up the Salt Lake City portion of this. Shout out Cole Davies winning Rookie of the Year. I think that's definitely well-deserved, especially with all the success that he had getting two wins. They were back-to-back as well, for him at least. Hayden Deegan finally getting over the hump in Supercross and not kind of throwing it away on his own like I said he would. I went back and saw some of my old tweets where I think it was Daniel Blair's asked what Hayden Deegan's biggest competition was, and my answer was himself. I thought he was going to throw it away. He tried to throw it away before he even had it in the beginning of the season, that's for sure, but he was able to rebound and not do that. Shout out Tom Viel, two-time MX2 world champion, comes over here. Now two-time back-to-back 250 East champion. He's now going to have to move up to the 450s next season. And shout out Cooper Webb, being now the oldest 450 Supercross champion, beating Eli Tomac by, I think it was like a month. So, big shout out to them. My big takeaways for the season. One, we'll have three. One, I think whoops are coming back. They seemed like we were getting some more legit Supercross whoops coming back, especially toward middle part of the year. There was times where there was 10 whoops, and that was very exciting. Shouldn't be a question in my mind. Yeah, I know there's data and everything, health, safety, all that. That's important. Yes, I get it. But throwing 10 whoops out there, you can't just go triple, triple, triple. You got to think about it a little bit. Number two, Chase Sexton needs to clean up the middle of the season mistakes. He rattled off an unbelievable streak with the last five races. He started off hot in Anaheim, and like I mentioned, Tampa, Detroit, Arlington, and now my mind is going blank, and I cannot remember the fourth one. But Sexton needs to clean up the middle of the season, just kind of lulls, it seems like he has. And my third big takeaway is I miss Eli Tomac. This year would have been so much fun if Eli Tomac was in it all season long. We got rumors he might be back next year on a KTM. We also got pretty much a confirmed rumor that Sexton will be going to the Monster Energy Kawasaki team. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But that is all off-season news. Now some pro motocross news before we get out of here. I will be out on vacation next week. Little honeymoon action. So I won't be able to record next week. So I'm going to try and record a motocross preview in the next couple days and schedule it to upload next week. With that being said, I fly home Saturday during the day, so I won't be able to watch Pro Motocross, sadly, but I will be able to watch it Sunday, hopefully, and I cannot wait for Pro Motocross. Like I said, hopefully I can get a preview episode recorded in the next 2 days before I leave for vacation. Talking underscore moto on X. Go give it a follow, like, retweet, all that good stuff. Just let me know your thoughts on the Supercross season. I think it was very interesting, very fun. We had 2 points races going all the way down to the very last round. In the 1 points race we didn't have going down to the last round, we had a rookie sensation and the champion get arrested. All right, talking underscore moto on X. We will be back maybe in a couple, hopefully ideally in a couple days, but you will hear it next week. So see ya.